Striketober in U.S. and around the world.
You should be able to go to work, get fair wages, fair compensation, work in a safe place, and be respected.
As Striketober class struggle builds in U.S., over 100,000 workers are on the picket lines.
The issue was very simple, the fundamental labor rights for all workers.
A general strike starts on October 20th in Korea.
The coal miners work anywhere from 10 to 12 hours a day, and all they're asking for right now is to get back what was taken away from them in 2016.
And miners are still striking after 6 months. We'll hear from United Mine Workers of America, District 20 Vice President Larry Spencer. From Pacifica Radio, this is COVID, Race, and Democracy, a collective effort by producers from Pacifica stations and radio affiliates. I'm your host, Steve Zeltzer. This week, over 100,000 workers are on strike in the United States, and millions of other workers are angry about their wages, conditions, and health and safety, exacerbated by the COVID pandemic. This is the largest worker strike wave in decades, and the treatment of workers by the capitalists, including deaths on the job, has infuriated workers and intensified the class struggle. 60,000 film and television workers, who are members of IATSE, were also set to strike today, but a tentative settlement was made by their leadership, and they will not be walking out. The corporations and their media are also blaming workers for being lazy, at the same time as workers' real wages have been going down for more than 30 years. Daily Show host Trevor Noah had this to say about a four-day work week.
You know, everyone's talking about like the four-day work week, and everyone's talking about like how you can limit times. You know what I realized the other day? I was like, I feel like whoever invented companies and like working and shit, they tricked every single one of us. Why do we act like the weekend is like different days to the weekdays? Who tricked us into this bullshit? Can somebody tell me that? Because then there's like, yeah, there's two. There's only two on the weekend. Then we work on, because that's the weekday. Who said that? How did we accept this as a trick? They are all the same day. They literally, there's no difference. Then they're like, you know, people who own companies are like, we would love to, but there's only two. There's only two of them. We would give you more if there were more, but there are only two of them. And then we're like, yeah, there's only two of them. Thanks for trying, companies. There's only two of them. If there were more days that they could give up, but weekend only has 2 days. Who made that rule? How did they trick us? Why do we not work the 2 or 3 days and then be like, the weekend is 4 days? Because who could tell me that a weekend is long enough? You have to like crowbar your Friday into the weekend. It's Friday. Friday's not even the weekend. Now you have to have like enough joy and energy to start enjoying the weekend, because Sunday you're stressed out about the Monday. Technically, the weekend, you need four days for a weekend. You need 1 day to party, 1 day to recover, 1 day to chill, and then 1 day to prepare for work. I think that's fair. And then 3 days, we work our asses off. Then we go back to the 4 days. I mean, this is just me and these are my opinions. 3 day week. Well, why are we negotiating for 4 day week like it's a nice thing? 3 day week, people. Then they'd be like, but the economy is a made up thing. Oh, shit, the cops are coming for me already.
Over 1,000 miners at Warriot Met Coal, which is controlled by the $7 trillion hedge fund Blackstone, have been hit by scabs and have been out for over 6 months in Alabama. We hear from United Mine Workers of America District 20 Vice President Larry Spencer.
My name is Larry Spencer. I'm the International Vice President for the United Mine Workers in District 20. We represent the people that are on strike against Warriot Met Coal. We came out on strike on April the 1st, and it's an unfair labor practice strike. Warriot Met Coal owns the coal mines in Brookwood, Alabama, Warriot Met number 7 and Warriot Met number 4 mine. They also own a central shop, and they own a washer over at the old number 5 mine. When Jim Walters went bankrupt in 2016, the coal miners at those mine sites agreed to take a contract that had less benefits and less pay in it to try to get the Warriot Met company up and running for and get their business started, and they was very, very profitable. And through the years, you know, they the contract had less holidays. It had about a $6 an hour cut in pay from some of the other mines right around it. It had, this company doesn't even want you to recognize the, you know, take off on Veterans Day so you can honor your veterans. And it's just a company that's very hard to work for. They demand you to work 6 days a week at times. They demand you at times to even work 7 days a week. The coal miners work anywhere from 10 to 12 hours a day. And all they're asking for right now is to get back what was taken away from them in 2016. We've had a very hard fought strike. We've had some of the Warrior Met employees have actually hit some of our people on the picket lines with their vehicles. We've had some of the contractors that work for Warrior Met threaten our people. We've had the people that have been hit have filed charges, and we're not seeing any results from those charges. It really disturbs us to see some of them that have crossed the line that they just don't know what they're actually getting into. This company has been negotiating with us. They have not come with a fair contract. Give you a couple of things that they've put out there is, you know, they have a clause in the contract that says that the company can decide that if you've done something wrong on the picket line, not a judge, not, you know, in court, the company can decide if you've done something wrong. And they have the right to discharge you. And in that clause, it says that the union has no right to represent you. We cannot have that in a contract. That's what that's saying is that we don't have an unfair labor practice charge, and we do. If we agree to that, that takes all of our rights away from our people for unfair labor practice. So we're not agreeing to that. They also want to make the people that's in there senior to the people that have made this company billions of dollars. They have no loyalty to the ones that have made this company the money that they've made and let the CEO enjoy his salary of about $7 million a year. And the COO makes, you know, somewhere around $3 million a year. And one of the executive assistants makes $1.3 million a year. All we're asking for is to have the same or close to the same contract that the other mines have that's within close vicinity around this operation. We have fought this battle for the last 6 months that these people have been out. All of these people that are still fighting this battle, you know, they are still wanting to go back to the coal mine, but they don't want to be treated and to be under the same contract that they had in the past 5 years. And it's not just the contract. This company allowed their supervisors to talk to you like you was, I don't know, a second-class citizen or something. That needs to stop. You know, these people need to have dignity when they go back. They need to be able to spend time with their family. We just went through a battle with COVID, and the coal mines that Warrior Met number 7 and Warrior Met number 4 and the central shop and the washer, between the company and the union setting standards, we kept COVID down at those mine sites. I can't say 100% sure, but we're getting reports right now that COVID is running rapid in those mines. There are people that, you know, have been off sick with COVID, have been off in the hospital. And I'm not saying that back when the union was there that we didn't have some of that, but we didn't have near that problem because we set standards and the union helped set standards to protect the employees, wearing masks, wearing gloves, cleaning the equipment, making sure that when you went in that your equipment was sterile, that you wasn't touching equipment that someone else with a virus or something left germs on it. That was the kind of things that we did. And that's what we're asking, you know, to get back in there with the union, get back in there with the employees and help set good standards with health, with safety, with everything that involves a coal mine.
That was Larry Spencer of United Mine Workers of America, District 20 Vice President.
You are listening to COVID, Race, and Democracy. Find out more about our work at our website, covidtaskforce.pacifica.org.
Workers are striking not just in the U.S., but around the world. On October the 11th, Italian logistic workers at Cobas had a general strike of FedEx, Amazon, with a mass picket at an Amazon warehouse. Roberto Luzzi is the international organizer with the Italian Democratic Militant Union, Cobas.
And the reasons are several reasons for the strike. The government policy, wages, that Italy is the only country in the most developed countries where wages have decreased in the 1992. Purchasing power now is less than almost 30 years ago. So we have lost a lot. And now there is also a wave of dismissals of workers in many places. So we are trying to have all these struggles to join together in one movement. And we are also fighting against the repression that is increasing against the workers' struggles with police interventions, firing of workers who have striked and so on. And among the companies that have closed factories and warehouses is FedEx, which has closed the warehouse in Piacenza. But the true purpose was union busting, was to destroy one of the workplaces where our union, Cobas, has almost 99% of the workers are Cobas members. Okay. And during this strike was called by several unions, non-mainstream unions, alternative unions. And there were the strike was especially successful in the logistics sector, where workers are organized with Cobas, which is the strongest union. The transport of goods was blocked all over Italy, especially in northern and central Italy, and also in public transport. In many cities, public transport was quite affected by the strike. And we had demonstrations in the biggest cities of Italy. And Sicovas organized the big picket before the main Amazon hub, which is near Piacenza. So there were more than 1,000 workers on strike who picketed this big fulfillment center in near Piacenza for several hours during the day. And it was yes, very important because it was the first time that Amazon suffered big losses because of a strike in Italy. We'll try to organize a demonstration before the Korean consulate in Milan in solidarity with the KCTU. We've also suffered government repression. For instance, they arrested our national coordinator in 4 years ago. They just built fake charges, and but then he was acquitted because it was all fake accusations. And so we feel the police against make. They often also take police measures preventing. For instance, now we are here at this picket and 13 workers who have participated to strikes were forbidden from coming to the places where they work. So they cannot, they were suspended and now fired from their warehouse. But before being fired, they could not come and protest because they had been suspended without pay for over a month. So these are all forms of repression. And so we feel very much the need to of solidarity also internationally. Yes, so we are we think it is very important to create a solidarity network of combative workers worldwide and of combative unions, of course.
That was Roberto Luzzi, international organizer with the Italian Democratic Militant Union, Sicovas.
We are the dogs of Tijuana, filled with garbage and stones, in the streets and in the fields, cursed and crushed beneath the wheels, but together we are strong. Our songs echo in the darkness, down the Maquiladora's halls, where Brother Solomon was tortured, one tree in the orchard cast a shadow on the wall. Is hard and long, but the dogs are coming home. We are the dogs of Tijuana, left for dead in the ravine, in the arroyos and the valleys, the sewers and the alleys. We shiver and we dream, so don't stop to ask directions. Think you lost your way. The wrath of the lion is the wisdom of God, and every dog has its day. just cave into the hands of wicked men, sold by the hands of strangers. There'll be no silver lining, friend, of that I'm sure. So shake my hand one last time, 'cause brother, this is war. We are the dogs of Tijuana, watching every road in the town. Horizon sea without a shore, right outside your door. So why weep now? The way is hard and long, but tonight we're coming home. Howling in the night, the world will not end in fire, it will not end in ice, it will end when we arrive.
That was Dogs of Tijuana by Tom Morello. This is Pacifica's COVID Race and Democracy. I'm Steve Zeltzer. Also, on Wednesday, October 20th in Korea, the Korean Confederation of Trade Unions with 1 million workers will be going on general strike for equality and against temporary work and union busting. The government has also arrested the president of the KCTU, Yang Kyung-soo, for leading a march of 8,000 workers in Seoul. The government said he broke COVID safety regulations, but according to the union, this has been used as a pretext to repress the labor movement. Pacifica talked with Mick Young Ryu, the international director of the KCTU, about their general strike this coming Wednesday, October 20th. Maybe you can talk about your struggles. You say that there's strikes all over Korea right now. There's a major upheaval going on among Korean working people.
Like in many other countries, workers are suffering from the result of the COVID-19 pandemic, especially the health crisis and the employment and income crisis, and especially the impact on income and employment security is concentrated on many precarious workers, like in many other countries. Even during the holiday, many workers are fighting on the streets to get better employment protection and the conversion from the precarious employment status into the regular status.
In the United States, the healthcare workers have been burned out. A lot of healthcare workers are quitting. They've been attacked because people have been told that they don't need masks, they don't need vaccines. It's created a very dangerous situation mm-hmm. for healthcare workers and for the population as a whole. Do you have that problem at all in Korea?
Yes, it's the big problem in Korea. So that's why our medical healthcare workers union went on a strike in some big hospitals and tried to get the government pledge to improve the working conditions. And according to the KPTU Healthcare Workers Solidarity Division, even in three public hospitals in Seoul metropolitan city, more than 600 nurses left from their position since the pandemic.
This effort to suppress democratic rights of trade unionists, unfortunately, there's a long history of that in Korea in the past against the unions and the KCTU. You think it's stepping up now because of the rising militancy in the trade union movement in Korea, that more and more workers are joining unions and want to have a strong union to represent them?
Yeah, especially after the candlelight protest for the impeachment of the previous government and the President Park, many people want to bring democracy in their workplace. And they found the union establishment is the best way to do that. So since the 2017, especially for the last 3 years, the membership of the KCTU is rapidly increased. And now we are representing more than 1.1 million workers in Korea. And according to the survey conducted by the Korean KCTU Research Center, most of the new members of the KCTU has some background like precarious employment and women workers and young workers. So now around 40% of the whole KCQ membership are precarious workers and women workers.
The march that you had, why don't you talk about that march and what the issues were in that march of 8,000 workers?
Yeah, the issue was very simple. The under three major agenda for us. The first one is the fundamental labor rights for all workers. Under the current Trade Union Act, even after the ratification of the ILO Convention number 87, the workers who are in non-standard forms of employment, like a gig workers, gig economy workers or platform workers, they are not covered by the Trade Union Act. Means it's very difficult, almost impossible for the platform and the non-standard forms of workers to form a union. And especially it's very hard for them to negotiate with their real employer because of the narrow definition of a worker and the employer under this law. So the trade union law is limited, applied in a limited way. And the Labor Standard Act is cover only workers who are working in a workplace with more than five employees. And there are lots of small and micro-sized enterprises in Korea. So many workers are not guaranteed even a very bottom line of the legal protection. So we asked for the fundamental labor rights and the labor law protection for all workers, regardless of the size of workplaces and regardless of the employment status. And the second issue was about our future challenges facing the climate changes and the transition to the digital economy. The existing regulation is very limited to protect the interest of the workers, especially during the transition period. So we are requesting the just transition framework to get big, have the bigger voices of the workers and trade unions during the transition. And the third one is the COVID-19 pandemic revealed that the social protection system in Korea is so weak, and there are a lot of workers who are excluded from the existing social protection system. So we requested the strengthen the public services and the social protection for all workers. So these are issues we raised during the demonstration.
What happened after that march?
The demonstration and rally is very much limited during this pandemic, and especially in Seoul metropolitan city, the government, the city government announced that in maybe November of 2020, the rally and demonstration with more than 10 person is prohibited regardless of the central government's social distancing measure. So when we declare that we will have a rally on that day, 1 week before the date, the police, the metropolitan city government asked us to cancel this rally, but we say no. And then the police notified that all the rallies hosted by the KCT on that day would be prohibited. But it is so important for us to raise the concerns of the working people. So we decided to go forward. After the investigation, the prosecutors decided to indict the KCT president, Yang Kyung-soo, for violation of the Infectious Disease Control Law and the Assembly and Demonstration Act, and for the violation or obstructing the general traffic during the rally. So this prosecution of the union leader is a very long pending practice in Korea, but they are making use of the Infectious Disease Control Law for the union activity. And when they decide to take him in custody, even before the trial, the police repeatedly said that there is a risk of a repetition of the crime. So it means their major concern is any further demonstration and assembly organized by the KCPU. So that's why we believe that this prosecution is targeted for the upcoming general strike. It's a one-day general strike for 20th of October. And the issue is the same what I mentioned for the slogan of the demonstration on July 3rd. Detention of the leader of the KCTU is not an obstacle for the KCTU to organize further actions and further activity. Actually, when you make up your mind to stand as a leader of the KCTU, you must predict that there is a possibility to go to jail. So the leaders of the KCTU are always prepared to go to jail. And the members of the officers of the KCTU also be prepared to lose their leaders during the struggle. So regardless of the prosecution and detention of our president, we will continue to fight for the rights of the workers.
That was Mick Young Ryu, the International Secretary of the KCTU, who spoke with Pacifica about their general strike.
Slap him up and shake him up and then you know. Let him off the float and bait him with the dough. You can do it funk or do it disco. Yeah, disco. 5 million ways to kill a CEO. Slap him up and shake him up and then you know. Let him off the float and bait him with the dough. You can do it funk or do it disco. I'm justified it, it was worth your waiting. On the turf debating how to get it percolating. He working you while we happy just to work a day. But I'ma slap him till my blood starts circulating. Do your checks have elasticity? Did they cut off your electricity? Did you scream and yell explicitly? Force the boss into complicity. I'm a white chalk stencil, but I push a pencil. Rolling dope fiend rentals to your residential. Broke as fuck eating lentils with no utensil. Finna teach pimp class with a whole credential. They own sweatshops, pet cops, and fields of cola. Murder babies with their molars on the areola. Control the Pope, Dalai Lama, holy rollers, and the Ayatollah. Bump this rolling in your bucket or your new Corolla. Or you might catch me on the scenic route with my penis out. Yelling twice for the executives with the meanest mouth. Wanna know what this demeanor's about? City try to clean us out. Greenest cloud, shut them down. I ain't never seen a drought. Interview, but they ain't calling you back. For the record, I ain't called it a gag. But tuck this in the small of your back. Wait in the bathroom stall till I tap.
That was 5 Million Ways to Kill a CEO by Boots Riley. In Massachusetts, 700 nurses at the Tenet Corporation-owned St. Vincent Hospital have been on strike for over 7 months over chronic staffing issues, exacerbated by the COVID pandemic. Pacifica Station's WPFW's labor segment, Union City Radio, with Chris Garlock and Ed Smith, interviewed Marie Rotico, registered nurse and vice president of the Massachusetts Nurses Association.
We went out on strike on March 8th. So today is our day 220. And essentially, you know, conditions inside the building prior to the pandemic were really bad with regard to lack of appropriate staffing at the bedside. So we represent the nurses. I am one of the nurses. So not only lack of nursing staff, but ancillary staff. And prior to the pandemic, probably for about a good 14 months, we had been discussing and negotiating actually our next contract with our employer, and things were not going well. We could never get them to discuss staffing in any way, shape, or form. And then the pandemic hit, and as you can imagine, our situation became exponentially worse. We were faced with the sickest patients we had ever seen in our lives. We were being told that we had to ration PPE, reuse not only masks, but gowns. We knew that they were implementing practices that really placed our patients and our nurses at risk with cohorting of patients, not cohorting patients that had COVID, mixing and mingling them. And they were also requiring that nurses take a 4 or 5 patient COVID assignment, which is absolutely an impossible task. Patients are not served well by the healthcare system when you do that. You know, patients had the call light on and there was no one to answer that call light. Because also Tenet Healthcare Corporation, after receiving $2.6 billion in CARES Act funding from the federal government, decided it was a good opportunity nationally to furlough nurses and other healthcare providers at the bedside because they were not able to do all of the procedures in the operating room or the cath lab or the GI lab during the height of the pandemic. So through the first and really the most of the second surge, we continued to attempt in good faith to engage them in bargaining about staffing, and they just would not have it. So unfortunately, after multiple actions in the building to draw attention and to get them to get serious and come to the table, which included, you know, petitions and marches on the bus and spontaneous, visits to the C-suite, and taking a vote of no confidence in both the CEO and the chief nursing officer, we decided in February this year that we had to finally take a strike authorization vote, and we got nearly a 90% yes on that. And so on March 8th, after reaching, you know, no agreement with regard to improving staffing, we had to go out on strike. Just prior to going out, I cannot tell you how demoralized and just absolutely destroyed many of the mm-hmm. nurses were. Mm-hmm. They had to really psych themselves up to go to work every day. I talked to nurses who told me that when they were finished their shift, they would sit in their car for a half hour and cry before they could actually get on the road and drive home, because they were just so distraught over what they had experienced in the previous 8, 10, or 12 hours. You know, when you have a 5-patient assignment, that's a really tall order. Can it be done? I think if the combination of patients is right and you have the appropriate ancillary staff and the support is there, I think on some days it probably can be done. But when you're taking care of 5 of the sickest patients you've ever seen in your life, the choices that you're making in some situations are just absolutely abhorrent. I had a nurse tell me that she had to make a choice whether to immediately go into the room of the patient that she was told was about to fall out of bed, or answer the car light for the patient that she knew was short of breath and having chest pain. They both had COVID, so getting into a room is not a quick process, you know?
Right.
Don all the appropriate equipment. And then to leave that room, you have to doff it and appropriately sanitize yourself and sanitize, you know, the gown that you were using. It's just absolutely outrageous that anyone like Carolyn Jackson, who hasn't spent a day at the bedside, could say that a 5-patient assignment like that is doable. It's criminal is what it is. You know, I mean, when a patient puts their call light on, they deserve somebody to answer that call light. And for a corporation who is making billions of dollars, for them to say they can't afford to do better, we know they just don't want to do better. So Tenet Healthcare is one of the most profitable, you know, for-profit healthcare organizations in the country. And I believe they even have, you know, hospitals or surgery centers outside of the country, too. They have over 45 to 50 hospitals. They're really getting into the surgery center business, you know, the outpatient care services now. But they're a really treacherous corporation over the years. I think over the past 20 years, they have paid over $2 billion in fines to the federal government for doing procedures that were unwarranted, unnecessary, for Medicare, Medicaid fraud. I mean, this is a really bad actor. And I believe that their share prices of their stocks tripled during the pandemic, if you can believe that.
Wow.
That any company should brag about making profits on the backs of patients is just reprehensible. And that's what we're dealing with, a really bad actor. At St. Vincent Hospital, there are days that we don't have laundry, we don't have face cloths, we don't have Johnny's, we don't have food for the patients. And he's getting $10 million in stock options, I'm assuming. It's pretty reprehensible when people really, you know, connect the dots and they see the depravity of this whole system, the way it is set up. So I am so proud to be one of the nurses at St. Vincent Hospital that wanted to step forward and say, this is wrong. This is an abomination to healthcare. You know, what they're trying to do in Worcester is not only break the backs of nurses, they're trying to break our union. I mean, it's very obvious. So I do hope that, you know, other unionists, my brothers and sisters across the country, you know, listen to this story. These are moments that we really need to take heed of right now, because we really do have an opportunity, because I think people are awakened across this country as a result of the pandemic. And they realize that, you know, they no longer want to take their lives in their hands, you know, and neither should they when they're working for profitable companies. You should be able to go to work, get fair wages, fair compensation, work in a safe place and be respected and be able to do your job and do it well. And for me, that means to be able to take care of patients and get them home safely. And in Worcester at Tenet Healthcare, St. Vincent Hospital, we have not been able to do that well for a long time. And enough is enough.
That was Maria Rotico, Vice President of the Massachusetts Nurses Association.
I get no doubt.
Tub Thumping by Chumbawamba. You're listening to Pacifica's COVID Race and Democracy. I'm Steve Zeltzer. WPFW's Union City Radio also spoke to Trevor Bittleman at Kellogg, president of local BCTGM3G, Bakery, Confectionery, Tobacco Workers, and Grain Millers International Union. Here's part of their conversation.
Trevor Bittleman, he's president of BCTGM, that's the Baker's Local 3G, in Battle Creek, Michigan. And Trevor, I don't know, are we finding you on the picket line, or where are you?
Actually, I'm back in my office now. I apologize for being a little late. Zoom decided it wanted to give me a computer update.
Hey, let's throw Zoom under the bus, brother. Let's throw Zoom under the bus. And not to worry. I appreciate that. I know you've been out on the picket line. Now, y'all went out on, I think it was Tuesday, midnight on Monday, early Tuesday morning. I have to be honest with you, Trevor, when I saw the news on Tuesday, I thought I'd gone into a time warp, because I thought this must be, you know, the Baker's strike from, you know, before. And then I realized, oh, no, this is a completely different strike. This is not Nabisco. This is Kellogg. So tell us about, I think it's 1,400 members, five different sites. You're, of course, there at Ground Zero in Battle Creek, Serial City, I think they call it, right?
Yes. Yep. That's what we've been historically known as. You have Post that was started here, Kellogg that was started here, Ralston's was here forever. So, yep, we are the Cereal City capital of the world. That's even known if you go across seas, people know where we are.
Got your Rice Krispies and your Frosted Flakes, your Corn Flakes, all that good stuff. But your folks, a lot of your folks I know have been working, like you got multi-generations, you know, fathers, sons, probably grandsons. What is it that got your members to walk out the door this week?
Well, I'm actually a fourth generation worker myself. So I have seen kind of the deterioration of really how they treat people. That's really where the biggest piece of this is. On top of the fact that they were just insisting upon what they didn't believe was concessionary, but a two-tier benefited system, to which, you know, current employees that had a path to our premium benefits was going to be taken away. Same with a pension. They wanted to take that path away for some current folks and also all future folks. And so really our message here is the future's not for sale. And I'm not here really fighting for me. I'm here fighting for we, you know, and I think that's something that the labor movement as a whole needs to start remembering. I've talked to a lot of people over the years, and they used to talk about protecting the unborn. And we really have kind of stopped doing that as a labor movement. And that's really where my members are. They have been very clear with us when they set us to the table, even as last year. You know, we have to stop making working conditions worse for those that are coming after us. And that's what we're here fighting over, is we're not going to have, you know, like I said, as a fourth generation employee, if I want to have my, you know, any of my sons or daughters decide to work here as a fifth generation employee, why on earth would I want that to have less? You know, especially when I'm working for a company that makes millions and millions and billions in profits. You know, they pay out, you know, billions in dividends, you know, they can afford this. This is something that they can afford very easily. They just don't want to do it anymore. And again, it comes down to the disrespect that they have been showing us for at least the last 15 to 20 years.
We're talking with Trevor Bittleman. He's president of Baker's Local 3G in Battle Creek, Michigan. About 1,400 folks across the country, including in Battle Creek, have been out on strike since early this week. Ed Smith, let me get you in on this conversation.
Well, Trevor, thanks for being on the show. And I know you're in the early stages of the strike. We enjoyed covering the prior strike regarding Nabisco, and we're pleased to see the outcome of that. So you're in your second day. When was the last negotiations that you had with management, and have you seen any impact on the strike of the strike yet? I know it's early.
Yeah, we're not really expecting to see much right off the gate. The last time we spoke with them was the 29th of September, I believe. But part of the, you know, a legal offer that they tried to make through an email included a week off with pay, but it had to be from October 5th to October 11th. So basically, they've made it clear that they were planning on being down for a week, but that's about as long as they can last. One of the pieces that I do want to speak to on that, because they're putting out, you know, their press release statement that talks about they're going to bring in a third party to come in and run the business. And that is something that scares us, but not from the standpoint of them actually being able to produce food, but more or less what they did when Memphis was locked out. So if you kind of back up to 2013, the company decided to lock the Memphis plant out, really over forcing this exact same issue. They were just trying to force it locally. Well, this same group, this AFIMAC group that they used, that group was in that plant. They stole everything that wasn't bolted down. They had people in there that were literally like taking your lunch from your hands from you. Like,
my God.
Had to lock themselves in rooms and put tables in front of doors so that people wouldn't take the food from you. It even got as bad as a gentleman that videotaped himself urinating in the product that they were making.
Oh, my God.
Tell me
it wasn't Frosted Flakes.
Rice Krispies, actually what it was. The gentleman was actually prosecuted for
it. I'm sure he was.
Yep. The company has tried to hide that. But then here we go again. They're aware of this, and this is the group that they're going to bring in to manufacture food. You know, that's their contingency plan. And again, to me, that just goes to show how much they really care about their customers.
That was Trevor Bittleman with the striking union at Kellogg Plant in Battle Creek, Michigan. We thank the production team of Union City Radio with Chris Garlock and Ed Smith from Pacifica Radio WPFW in Washington. Let's hear voices of the striking Kellogg workers.
We feed all these families, but I can't feed mine.
You know, best friend died. Yep, sorry, not my problem. That's yours. We got cereal to make.
We work 7 days a week. We are literally scheduled 7 days a week.
For any time that someone would feel sick or whatever, they want you to use your vacation days as opposed to having sick days. And again, in working excess of 120 days in a row.
400 million dollars in profit on cereal alone is not something you can walk in and tell us we're gonna give you less for.
If you don't be here, you get a point. If you get a point, you can get suspended. You know what I mean? So we got no choice. You have to be here. but it's just killing us.
You know, you can't even now go in there and tell them that your aunt passed away and you need a day off. They'll tell you to call in or use a vacation day.
So in order for me to get a day off, someone else is working 16 hours. Very often, we don't even know that we have to work 16 hours until 10 minutes before it's time to go home. If you have dogs, if you have kids you have to pick up from school, if you have other obligations, I hope you have somebody to call because you have to stay. They could tell me at 10:45, Heather, you're forced over, you have to stay. So then I'll work that next shift. At 6:30 a.m., I can go home. But then my regularly scheduled shift starts at 2:30 the next day. So there's 8 hours off in between, and that, according to them, is plenty.
They want to take our cost of living away. They want to take our vacations. They want to take our holiday pay away.
They want to take away any kind of ability for new people to come in to have what we have.
We're done, you know, just giving up concession by concession. We're done being bullied by a company that makes millions and millions and, you know, gives out billions of dollars in dividends.
That direct path to full-time employment, these transitionals never saw it.
Being a transitional, we pay for our health care. Our wages are different. We don't get a pension like everybody else does.
There is no difference between the guy that works right next to me tomorrow or 10 years from now. There's no reason why that guy should have a lower benefit level, a lower retirement level than what I do.
That's why we are striking, because we want the better pay, pension for everybody. It's not for only one group.
I have this job because people like my dad that worked here before me for 34 years didn't give up stuff coming in. We're just kind of looked over, your number.
We hear every day, and then today they're trying to tell us we make too much money.
They want to complain about what our wage is, and they want to talk about what our wage is. Well, if you didn't make me work every single Saturday and Sunday, if you didn't make me work every single holiday, my annual income wouldn't be at these levels that you don't want to go spread around like it's a bad thing.
The contract, it doesn't lend itself to future generations of sustainability here. I'm second generation, my father worked here, I'm not the only one. It's kind of a way of life, and we don't want to rob that from the next generation.
We've been asked about how long we're willing to fight, and at the end of the day, it's going to be one day longer than they are.
Voices of the striking Kellogg workers.
We will not bow down to our
racism.
We will not bow down to...
From October 22nd to 25th, the International Tribunal on U.S. Human Rights Abuses against Black, Brown, and Indigenous peoples, with an esteemed global panel of jurists, will convene in person in New York and virtually via live stream. You can hear the live stream of the entire tribunal from Friday evening to Sunday afternoon by going to tribunal2021.com. Again, that's tribunal2021.com. For more info about the tribunal, go to Spirit of Mandela, all one word, .org. That's spiritofmandela.org. Again, the dates are Friday, October 22nd, to Sunday, October 25th. Learn about the government involvement in racist police killings, hyper-incarcerations, political incarcerations, and systematic environmental and public health racism against Black, Brown, and Indigenous peoples.
2 weeks from today, COVID, Race, and Democracy will feature excerpts of the historic Human Rights Tribunal. And that concludes today's edition of COVID, Race, and Democracy. We thank all of Pacifica's sister stations and its radio affiliates who contribute to the production of this show. Today's show was produced by Steve Zeltzer with editing by Polina Vasilyev. Our executive producers are Akua Holt, Polina Vasilyev, and Steve Zeltzer. You can find this and all previous episodes at our website, covidtaskforce.pacifica.org. Make sure you click the subscribe button. You can follow us on Twitter at PacificaCRD and on Facebook at COVID, Race, and Democracy. I've been your host, Steve Zeltzer. Thanks for listening.